Today on New Horizons, New York Times reporter Philip Sheenan, author of The Commission, The Uncensored History of the 9/11 Investigation.
I think, unhappily, there's real truth in the idea that there are a group of people who are real insiders, and they're very nervous about publicly criticizing other insiders. Because subpoenas really weren't used, I think there was concern that at the end of the day, the 9/11 Commission probably missed a lot of stuff that's still sitting in the files in government agencies. I think the one thing that was missing from this investigation were people outside government, true outsiders, people who had no political ties, people who would have brought a very different perspective to this investigation.
I'm Bob Custer, president of Boise State University. Welcome to New Horizons. Philip Sheenan is an investigative journalist for the New York Times. He was the newspaper's lead reporter for coverage of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States, also known as the 9/11 Commission. The commission was created by congressional legislation in November 2002 to prepare a full and complete account of the circumstances surrounding September 11, 2001 attacks. Chaired by former New Jersey Governor Thomas Keene, the commission included 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans. During the course of its investigation, the commission interviewed more than 1,200 people and reviewed millions of pages of documents. In its 2004 final report, the commission made a number of recommendations, but it did not place blame squarely on any one person or agency. Philip Sheenan's new book, The Commission, The Uncensored History of the 9/11 Investigation, provides an insider's look at how the commission operated as it investigated the most devastating terrorist attacks ever to occur on American soil. It tells the story of the political pressures, infighting, and successes of the commission. It also exposes the disastrous lack of communication among government officials and agencies that prevented them from responding to reports of possible terrorist attacks in the months leading up to September 11th, 2001. Mr. Sheenan has worked for the New York Times since 1981. He lives and works in Washington, D.C. Today he joins us on the phone from Washington. Phil Sheenan, welcome to New Horizons.
Bob, thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's start at the very beginning. You covered the commission as a reporter. The commission comes to a close, issues its report. You decide to hang in there and turn this thing into a book. Why?
Well, because it turned out that I missed part of the story. During the course of the 9/11 Commission investigation, we reporters were granted no access to the people who were actually doing most of the investigating, and that's the staff. There were these 85 people who really did the digging, not the 10 commissioners. And suddenly after the commission went out of business, those people were available to talk to me. They'd been forbidden to talk to reporters during the investigation, and they had some incredible stories to tell, both about the detective work of the commission and of these incredible fights that were apparently going on within the commission and between the commission and the Bush administration.
Were they all uniformly, maybe anxious is the wrong word, but willing to discuss these matters with you?
Well, a lot of them were very nervous about talking to me, and some people didn't talk to me in the end, but an awful lot of folks did, some of them under a promise of anonymity, some not. But, you know, we were talking about important issues, including issues involving classified information, so they may have had some reason to be wary of talking to a reporter.
You write that there was really no template for this scale of investigation. In the end, how does that affect its success?
Well, there was a template to the extent that we had some big investigations like the Challenger disaster, certainly the Warren Commission, the investigations after Pearl Harbor. And the chairman and vice chairman of the 9/11 Commission, Tom Kaine and Lee Hamilton, faced a much bigger challenge, which was to take on the biggest terrorist attack in history, certainly the biggest attack on American soil since Pearl Harbor, and it could be argued even before that. They did their best to try to avoid some of the problems of the earlier investigations, all the conspiracy theories that are still tied to the Warren Commission, but it sure looks like they failed on that score in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you interview more than 1,200 people and you review millions of pages of documents, you're going to have a system of some kind to keep all the information organized and to be able to recall it when staff and commission members and others need to get to it. Was there such a thing in place in this particular case?
Well, there were, you know, there were, they had a computer system. They had a classified version of the computer system and a declassified version of it. It sure looks like, though, that the central figure in compiling all the information was one human being, a fellow by the name of Philip Zelikow, who was the staff director of the 9/11 Commission. He's not a name people know really in the outside world, but he is a very well-respected historian at the University of Virginia who was sort of the key investigator who really drove the investigation on a day-to-day basis.
And, of course, we're going to talk about him in a moment because he is the subject of considerable controversy in your book and in real life during this commission's early days anyway. But let's, before we get to that, talk about the role of the White House here. They resisted creating the commission. Again, I guess it's pretty obvious. 2004 is Bush's reelection. This is around what, 2002, did we say?
Well, certainly the push for a 9/11 commission began shortly after the attacks. But no, the real effort to get a commission created came in 2002.
And so what? They're simply nervous about the fact that something could come out in this report that could damage Bush's reelection efforts.
Well, they're dead set against it from the get-go, especially Vice President Cheney, apparently. And, you know, their argument was, well, listen, you know, we just had these terrible terrorist attacks. We're worried that there are going to be more attacks soon. We can't tie up the CIA and the FBI and the Pentagon in responding to an investigation at a moment when they better be prepared to defend us from another terrorist attack. And I there's some legitimacy to that, I think. But it sure also appears that they were very nervous about what might emerge if there was an independent investigation of 9/11. And it sure does appear they had an awful lot to worry about in terms of public disclosure, because as the record shows, the Bush White House was warned to an extraordinary degree before 9/11 that something terrible was about to happen. And it sure appears that they just didn't pay much attention to a lot of that information.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to cover some of that a little bit later. Let's talk about the appointment process itself. First of all, Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle is to appoint, what, five Democrats to the commission?
Well, the congressional leadership, that's Daschle and his counterpart in the House, who would have been Dick Gephardt at the time, they sort of choose the five Democrats who are going to be on the commission, including the vice chairman, the number two official. And then the selection of the Republicans is left to the White House, which chooses the chairman, and then to the Republican congressional leadership to choose the other four.
I see. So Kaine, then, former New Jersey Governor Thomas Kaine, who was selected to chair the commission, was an appointment of the Bush White House.
Yeah, that's right. He was their second choice, though. They'd originally chosen Henry Kissinger, and very quickly Henry Kissinger backs out, and the White House is up against it and quickly searches out for a sort of compromise candidate and finds Tom Kaine, who's this very well-respected, very admired politician out of New Jersey.
Before we leave Kissinger, tell us the story about Kissinger getting interviewed by the Jersey Girls, which I guess had a lot to do with his deciding he didn't want any part of this.
Well, it's one of my favorite anecdotes in the book, but Kissinger really is forced off the 9/11 Commission by the will of a bunch of the 9/11 widows who are known collectively as the Jersey Girls. They're a bunch of very hard-charging, dynamic, and very intelligent women from New Jersey who sort of led the effort to get the 9/11 Commission created. And after it's created, Kissinger, as I say, is named the first chairman. And the Jersey Girls see that Kissinger just has an awful lot of conflicts of interest running this sort of investigation. He's close to the Bush White House. He's got lots of clients in his international lobbying firm with lots of interest in the oil industry that might not want to embarrass Arab governments that might be tied into 9/11. And the Jersey Girls go to Kissinger's office for what's supposed to be a very friendly meeting at Kissinger's offices in New York. And it turns very unfriendly very quickly with the Jersey Girls confronting Kissinger, demanding that he make his client list public, suggesting that maybe he has even represented the interests of the Bass Bin Laden family over time. Kissinger apparently is so rattled by their questions that he nearly falls off the sofa, spills his coffee, and the next day contacts the White House and resigns as chairman of the 9/11 Commission.
And the fact is, he really wasn't willing to release that client list under any circumstances.
No, absolutely not.
Now, maybe we should stop for a moment and talk about the 9/11 widows who became known affectionately as the Jersey Girls. How did they organize themselves? I mean, they didn't have professional staff, or did they? I assume they were working around kitchen tables and maybe an office or two that one of them had back in Jersey. How many of them were there that were actually on task?
Well, there were four or five principal ones, but they were, you know, they were all in the same part of New Jersey, close to Manhattan. They came to know each other fairly quickly from early family meetings. And, you know, no, they had no background in Washington. They had no background in lobbying. I think some of them will tell you that they didn't really even understand the difference between the House of Representatives and the Senate when this all began. And they gave themselves an education in how Washington works. And I think in many ways it was a very bitter education for them, and remains so to this day.
Do they still organize themselves? Are they still an entity that from time to time comes together, if for no other reason, to speak on issues of national security that they feel are in any way still related to 9/11?
Oh, yeah. No, some of them have gone on to write books, and you'll see them often on television and radio shows. No, they're definitely still around. In fact, some of them, you know, have talked, and I will acknowledge since the book appeared, about the need for some sort of new investigation of parts of 9/11.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that, too. Lee Hamilton, the co-chair, former Democratic congressman, is that correct?
Right.
And I was interested in the fact that by the time I finish reading your book, I pick up the impression, I mean, I think it's something you actually said, that the Bush White House in some ways was more comfortable with Lee Hamilton than it was with former Governor Kaine, who was supposed to be the Republican pick on this commission.
No, absolutely.
And it had to do apparently with his kind of inside the beltway mentality. You mentioned that the Jersey Girls had no background. And by the time I finished the book, I thought, gee, you know, it's too bad they couldn't have found some commissioners with little or no experience inside the beltway, because that seems to have affected the way the commissioners conducted the investigation or failed to ride herd on a staff that might have been at odds with the true mission of the commission to seek the truth.
No, I think there's real truth in that. And I think, unhappily, there's real truth in the idea that there are a group of people who are real insiders, and they're very nervous about publicly criticizing other insiders. And Lee Hamilton, who was the number two, he was the co-chairman of the vice chairman of the 9/11 Commission, 34 years in the House of Representatives, very much admired by Republicans and Democrats in the House, very, very mild-mannered, is able to maintain friendships across the aisle, including friendships with people like Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld from their days in the House. And he is not the first choice of congressional Democrats to be the number two in the 9/11 Commission. They want George Mitchell, who was the former Senate Majority Leader and a very tough-minded, very smart, very partisan Democrat. But Mitchell, like Kissinger, pulls out very early, and the Democrats, up against it, choose Hamilton to be the number two. But Hamilton is as much a man of the establishment, as much a Washington insider, as he is a partisan Democrat. And at the end of the day, the White House found it much easier to reach agreement with Lee Hamilton than they did with Tom Kaine, the chairman, the Republican, because Kaine seemed to be, indeed, he was an outsider. He was more independent-minded than Hamilton.
And another one that comes to mind on the Republican side, to the extent that there was concern about whether the Republicans would be too deferential to the Bush White House. We're out here in Idaho on the border of the state of Washington, and former U.S. Senator Slade Gorton, who I've always had a lot of respect for anyway, comes off really well in your book.
No, he's I will say that, you know, in terms of the independent-minded Republicans, apart from Kaine, I'd have to say Gorton qualifies. He was really willing to give it to the Bush White House. He was really willing to make them angry, and he was really willing to push for information. He was the Republican who broke ranks and agreed to issue a subpoena to the Pentagon at the end, because he was convinced that the Pentagon was hiding something from the commission. No, people on both sides of the aisle had an awful lot of respect for Gorton by the end of the investigation.
Now, you mentioned the subpoena process. Didn't former Governor Kaine kind of back off of using the subpoena?
Well, at the very early stages of the investigation, Kaine and Hamilton, who were very like-minded in a lot of ways, and again, very bipartisan in spirit, decided that subpoenas were a very bad idea, even though they had the ability to go to court and demand access to documents and interviews through subpoenas, they didn't want to do it. They certainly didn't want to do it routinely because they thought that would set up a very confrontational attitude with the White House and with the other agencies of government that would sort of block cooperation from the get-go. And most of the Democrats on the commission, apart from Hamilton, though, believe strongly that subpoenas should have been used routinely from the beginning. And because subpoenas really weren't used, I think there was concern that at the end of the day, the 9/11 commission probably missed a lot of stuff that's still sitting in the files in government agencies.
When you look at the appointments to the 9/11 commission, and you would be able, far better than I, to compare and contrast to earlier commissions, how does the quality of the appointments stack up against either the best standards, whatever they are, the best practices, or former appointments to commissions like this?
I don't hear much criticism on that score. You know, you had former United States senators on this. You had former governors, Illinois Governor Jim Thompson, one of the Republicans. You had a former Deputy Attorney General, Jamie Gorelick. You know, it was a very distinguished panel in many ways, and not much different from the panels that investigated other big tragedies. I think the one thing that was missing from this investigation were people outside government, people who, you know, scientists, engineers, true outsiders, people who had no political ties, people who would have brought a very different perspective to this investigation. And I've certainly heard it argued that in the future, this sort of investigation should really be carried out either entirely or largely by people who have no political ties whatsoever. You know, in this case, maybe it would have been more valuable to have historians and scientists and engineers carry out this investigation than people who had a lot of political ties to the Bush administration or to congressional Democrats.
You're listening to Phil Sheenan. He is the author of The Commission, The Uncensored History of the 9/11 Investigation. Well, let's talk about the staff. If it's difficult putting together a commission, it's really tough when you try to organize a staff and find a staff that is without conflicts itself. Was this an impossible task? I mean, are you always going to find those conflicts, or does it seem the commission members found an unusual number of staffers with serious conflicts, especially at the top?
Well, I think it's always difficult in Washington to find people without any conflicts of interest. But I guess we're hinting around at this fellow Philip Zelikow again. He, you know, it's a polite fiction in Washington that blue ribbon commission reports are written by the blue ribbon commissioners. That's almost never the case. They're almost always written by an independent staff led by an outside staff director of some sort. You know, in Washington, it tends to be an historian or a congressional researcher. In this case, the 9/11 commission, Kane and Hamilton, found Philip Zelikow. Again, he's an historian at the University of Virginia who has a background in all sorts of national security and White House issues, somebody whose resume would really suggest that he would be just the right man for the job, but whose resume also includes all sorts of ties, friendships with the people who were right at the heart of the 9/11 Commission's work. He had been on the National Security Council staff for the first President Bush and became a very close friend of another staffer by the name of Condoleezza Rice. They'd gone on to write a book together after the first Bush presidency. And Condoleezza Rice is right at the heart of everything that the 9/11 Commission was investigating. Zelikow had all sorts of other ties to folks in the Bush White House, and certainly there was a belief on the staff and among some of the Democratic commissioners that Zelikow never should have been put in charge of an investigation that should have focused and detargeted on many of his best friends.
So this wasn't the case of Zelikow keeping information about his past relationships and involvements with Rice and Cheney and Bush from them. I mean, the commissioners knew this.
I think the answer is they knew some of it. They knew about the book with Rice. That was a little hard to keep from them. But they didn't, I think, and I believe, that they didn't know an awful lot about the extent of Zelikow's ties. Certainly, I don't think it was well known into the very last stages of the 9/11 Commission's work that Zelikow was the secret author of the White House Doctrine on Preemptive War. He had written the sort of pivotal document for the White House in 2002 that was sort of the scholarly argument for the United States to go to war against a nation that did not pose an immediate military threat to this country. And certainly when that document was revealed in 2002, it was widely believed that document was aimed at Iraq, that it was going to be the justification for the war in Iraq. And it had been written, although nobody knew it at the time outside the White House, by Philip Zelikow, who was now running an investigation into whether or not there were connections between Iraq and al-Qaeda that would have justified the war that he helped make possible.
And don't I remember that former Senator Bob Kerry, who I think was appointed to the commission to take the place of Max Cleland, didn't he actually go to Kaine and say, look, I don't know how you can continue having Zelikow serve? Was that the...
Kerry came into the investigation late. He replaced former Senator Max Cleland, one of the Democrats who had dropped off the investigation. And Kerry comes in at the end of 2003, really with only several months left in the investigation. And he goes down to Washington. He lives in New York. And he starts, you know, rummaging through the files. And on the very first day he starts rummaging through the files, he finds a memo written by Zelikow in which Zelikow describes all of these connections to the White House and all of these potential conflicts of interest. And that same day, apparently, Kerry picks up the phone and calls Tom Kaine, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, and says, I don't know what you're thinking of, but how could you possibly have hired Zelikow? You know, unless Zelikow is removed, I'm not going to serve on this commission. He goes or I go. And apparently Kaine, through some extended negotiations, talks Kerry out of resigning. But I think that's an indication of just how serious some of the Democrats on the commission thought Zelikow's conflicts were.
And this is the real problem I had reading your book and dealing with Kaine as the commission chair. Even after your book is out, Kaine's writing defending the appointment of Zelikow. And I just can't quite understand, given these very serious conflicts, what I know about former Governor Kaine, why he'd hang in there like this. What would be his motive?
Well, I mean, to distance themselves from Zelikow is to distance themselves from the 9/11 Commission report. And, you know, the 9/11 Commission report has basically had a pretty golden reputation since it was issued. You know, members of the commission believe this is the bit of public service they're likely to be remembered for. And to distance themselves from the guy who largely wrote the 9/11 Commission report, Philip Zelikow, is to distance themselves from the thing that brought them their greatest glory in their careers. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing to do.
I guess I was thinking more about the very beginning. To the extent that Kaine knew anything about Zelikow at the beginning, why he wouldn't have red-flagged a guy like that at the outset rather than let him become the executive director? Was there significant pressure that he had to do this?
Well, I think two things. One is I think that Kaine and Hamilton did not know everything about Zelikow's background when they hired him. And I quote them in the book as saying they didn't know everything about his background when they hired him. Secondly is I think, you know, Tom Kaine and Lee Hamilton are very experienced politicians. They've been around big egos all their careers, and they basically thought they knew how to rein in another big ego, and this time in the guise of Philip Zelikow. They thought if Zelikow really got out of hand, they'd learn about it and they'd do something about it. And I think that may reflect sort of an overconfidence on their part.
So what is Phil Zelikow doing these days?
Well, shortly after the 9/11 Commission went out of business in 2004 and after the 2004 elections when President Bush was reelected, Condoleezza Rice becomes Secretary of State, and one of her first acts is to hire Philip Zelikow as the State Department's counselor, which is sort of an all-purpose job very close to Rice's office in which he can advise her on all matters of national security. And you can imagine how that went over with some of the 9/11 Commission staff when they heard about it. You know, it sounded to some of them like a payoff to Zelikow for doing what he did on the 9/11 Commission. After that, he resigned about a year later and went back to the University of Virginia, where he is, you know, returned to his work as an historian.
It's amazing what tenure brings you. But anyway, having said that, you reveal in the book, Phil, that Karl Rove, the president's political advisor, may have had contact with Zelikow, and Rove, throughout those critical months, was very much concerned, I suppose. You could understand that. May not be all proper in terms of doing anything about it, but certainly you can understand where Rove, as the president's political advisor, would be coming from, trying to protect his reelection efforts. How was this discovered?
Well, you know, Rove, it turns out, was very much involved in the selection of the selection of some of the 9/11 commissioners. He's actually the guy who makes the offer to Tom Kaine to be chairman of the 9/11 commission. And throughout the investigation by the 9/11 commission, I am told by others at the White House, he was very much hands-on in trying to monitor what the 9/11 commission was up to. You know, they were very worried at the White House that the 9/11 commission would turn up evidence to suggest some malfeasance by the or incompetence by the White House that might before 9/11 that might have led to 9/11. And they were very scared that if that information was found and made public, that that could do real damage to President Bush's hopes for re-election in 2004. So he was keeping an eye on the 9/11 commission. And as I say in the book, Zelikow's secretary at the commission is very startled one day to pick up the phone, and it's, I think, in June 2003, and it's Karl Rove on the line looking for Philip Zelikow, calling directly. And she takes a message for Zelikow, and Rove calls the next day and apparently calls a couple more times a couple months later. And word of these telephone calls, the word of the fact that Rove is in touch with Zelikow, you know, spreads wildly on the staff, which thinks that, you know, this is the evidence they had feared would emerge, that, you know, the fix was in, that Zelikow was some sort of White House mole. What possible reason could there be for the executive director of the 9/11 commission to be in touch with, you know, President Bush's top political aide? What explanation for that could there be? After it becomes known on the staff that these telephone calls are going on, Zelikow apparently calls in his secretary, shuts the door, and orders her to stop keeping any log book of his contacts with the White House. And the secretary thought she was being asked to do something improper and notified the chief lawyer on the commission that she was worried about all this. I can't tell you exactly what was discussed between Philip Zelikow and Karl Rove, and both Zelikow and Rove. Rove has since gone on the record after the book came out to say that this was entirely innocent conversation about Zelikow's old work at the University of Virginia. But the fact that there were these contacts, the fact that it was known on the staff that these contacts were occurring, creates a huge suspicion about exactly what Zelikow was up to.
Let me back up a bit, because now that we've gotten into Karl Rove's role in actually inviting Kaine to be the chair. This commission was really created by Congress, correct?
Well, it's
I mean the language, yeah. Creating the commission.
Ultimately, it is considered a creature of Congress, as I understand it.
Yeah. If that's the case, and certainly Congress had no responsibility for all of the agencies that end up playing a role in what happened or what didn't happen regarding 9/11, and if in fact it's in the executive branch of government that this all occurs, then I'm having a tough time understanding why Congress allows the executive branch to play any role in the selection of the members for a commission that is investigating the executive branch of government.
Well, two things occurred to me. One is that, you know, that's just the long tradition, and the law creating the commission had to be signed by the president. You know, he was a participant in the creation of the commission, and I think the long history, you know, Congress does on occasion have its own investigations that have no involvement by the executive branch, but for this sort of commission to be, you know, a truly wide-ranging federal in the largest sense investigation, you had to have the president's involvement, you had to have the White House's involvement, and that's certainly what happened here, as it had happened in the Warren Commission, the Pearl Harbor investigations. There was involvement from all branches of government.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to spend time in the next half hour talking about just how so many of these agencies are involved, and it's almost as though they needed Clinton's political advisor at the table as well, because, of course, as to these many questions regarding what we knew and what we didn't know and what we acted upon and what we didn't act upon, it was not only the Bush White House, it was the Clinton White House as well, as you point out in your book. Philip Sheenan, thank you for joining us today on New Horizons. Next week, part two of our conversation with Mr. Sheenan. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. Research provided by Julie Hahn. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Custrow. Please join me next week as we talk to the people who help shape our world in both the Treasure Valley and beyond on New Horizons.